Week. Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. talk host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. You can learn more about Mark by going to www.marklevineradio.com. Mark, good to have you back.
Good to be here, Alan.
So what do you think about, as far as I'm concerned, man, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are two archetypal basket cases, and if anything, they should be the poster children for what not to do, what to do. And yet here you have Newt Gingrich acknowledging that, as far as his own thinking is concerned, he acknowledges that he thinks overall it's been a good model for the country. What's your reaction to this?
My reaction is Newt Gingrich is just a symbol of everything that's wrong in Washington. Here he's paid $250,000 by a private company. It was then a private company that wants to get in good with the government. And he, like so many members of Congress.
GSE.
Well,
it's a GSE.
What a government-sponsored enterprise is, if you know the history of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, is they were government-run until 1968 when Congress decided to make them entirely private. They then became entirely private until they fell apart. As you know, under the last year,
which means they were never really private. Which means they were never really private. Which means they
were
never really
private.
It's like Amtrak
or AIG or Goldman Sachs or any other private enterprise. Citibank.
Yeah, but they were expected to pay back their dollars. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they weren't even included in Frank Dodd. Which means that the culprits who triggered most enabled all these banks to hang all the bad paper were disproportionately less than expected when compared to others. They were comparatively finding that less was expected of them than were others when looking at the Dodd-Frank bill. And in my estimation, that just sort of incentivizes the very wrongdoing we've been trying to curtail. What do you think of these executives expecting millions of dollars in bonuses? You know, when the government hears about these millions of dollars in bonuses for other Wall Street companies, they get all over them. And I think to some degree, rightfully so. But with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, these guys seem to be getting a relative pass, or do you think I'm off base a bit?
No, I think of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac like I think of other private companies bailed out by the government, like AIG and Goldman Sachs and Citibank and General Motors and all of them. I think that they were too big to fail. I understand why the bailouts occurred, but I think it's disgusting that officials would profit by it. I think it's even more disgusting that the leading contender for the Republican nomination, Newt Gingrich, gets $250,000 for what? He says he's not lobbying. He's an historian. He's not an accountant. He has no corporate record. They're paying him because he's the former Speaker, and everybody knows it. And the sad thing about this kind of corruption in Washington is that it's legal and done all the time. That's the sad thing.
And done by, and you'll agree with me, liberal that you are, you'll concur with me that it happens and is perpetrated from both sides of the aisle.
It does, but I think you'll find about three-quarters of the time it's done by Republicans. I think about a 3-to-1 ratio. It's interesting, 60 Minutes did a piece just last Sunday on how members of Congress trade in inside information, another disgusting thing that's perfectly legal. And it's interesting to me that the vast majority of people they named were Republicans, including the head of the Financial Services Committee, Spencer Backus, who said, hey, it's legal, I'm doing it, and made millions doing it. It's disgusting.
I would have to see a more independent metric before I would swallow that one is disproportionately doing it more than the other. And I would make that assertion regardless of the person on the other end of the mic conveying
said
information.
Just look at Jack Abramoff. I mean, here you have a guy running.
I had Jack Abramoff on my show a couple of days ago, and I think I wound up taking him apart more than he was expecting. Let me move on now to Occupy Wall Street. Actually, no,
sure.
We'll do Occupy Wall Street on the other side of the break. Let me ask you a bit more about Newt Gingrich, because you may have heard the shock poll. The guy's like at 32% in Iowa, Mitt Romney's at 19, and, Kane's what, at 14, 13%? Now, this is not emblematic of the country. The country polls show the three of them much closer, but in the Iowa caucus, that's what's happening. But I'm wondering how long that's going to last, because there are certain inconsistencies with Mr. Gingrich. First, he supported the intervention in Libya. Then he opposed it. First, he praised Representative Ryan's Medicare plan. Then he called it right-wing social engineering. He advocated for a health care mandate at one time himself a long time ago, but now, of course, does not. He endorsed cap and trade a long time ago, but now opposes it. I mean, if the claim against Romney is going to be his kaleidoscopic grasp of principles, I don't know where Newt Gingrich is going to be able to go from this point on. What say you?
Well, again, Alan, I'm in the weird aspect of actually agreeing with you. I think the Republicans have no choice. I mean, I think they're in real trouble, and that's why you see every week somebody higher up in the polls. I mean, Kaine is dead, but Kaine was never going to be a candidate. Kaine was, frankly, a place where the undecided could claim they were for someone. The Republicans weren't actually for Kaine. Perry self-destructed. Michelle Bachmann self-destructed. Gingrich self-destructed early. They forgot it because it's been a few months, and now you bring up all the problems with him. And the real problem is that the putative front runner, Mitt Romney, nobody likes. He can never get above 25% in the polls because he's...
Yeah, but you know, the funny thing is, I've been looking at that, and the funny thing is, while he's never gotten above, he rarely gets below. Of all the people, if you look at the slugging average, you know what the slugging average, if you look at the slugging average, Babe Ruth is still the best, even though he's no longer the home run king. When you look at the slugging average, in other words, for every time he got up to bat, how many bases was he able to put under his belt? When you look at the slugging average, well, then all of a sudden, Mitt Romney's looking pretty decent, is he not? Let's face it, in poll after poll after poll, when they do these hypothetical national runs, Romney's beating Obama, granted by 2 to 3 points, always within the margin of error, but still, nonetheless, he's usually beating him. Do you feel that the GOP might eventually feel more comfortable with this moderate guy than they did with McCain, if for no other reason than he's had more fiscal success and other attributes that can be more positively attached to him? What's your read on that?
Well, first of all, national polls 1 year before an election mean nothing. At this stage, Mondale beat Reagan and Dukakis beat Bush. So national polls mean nothing. The primary polls do matter, though, and you're absolutely right. There's a quarter of the Republicans that are going to vote for Mitt Romney always, just like there's 10% of Republicans that are always going to vote for Ron Paul. I don't think Ron Paul can ever break 15%, and I'm not sure Mitt Romney can break 50, and that's why the majority of Republicans, the two-thirds that aren't settled on Paul or Romney, just vacillate back and forth between the flavor of the month. And the answer is there's nobody left. There's nobody left. They're not going to go to Huntsman. He's too moderate. They're not going to go to Santorum. There's nobody left. They're going to have to nominate Romney by default, but they won't like it.
They may not like it, but here's the paradox. I feel the conservatives will be comparatively far more comfortable with coming out to support Romney than was the case with McCain in 08, and I think that's exactly what worries Democrats the most. Stick with us. You are with Babylon, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Alan.
As the holidays approach.
Assisting me in the opining department on this and other matters, old friend of the show, one of my regulars for this part of the day and this part of the week, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. talk host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. You can learn more about Mark, again, by going to marklevineradio.com. Mark, good to have you back. And what are your thoughts about what we've learned more about as it relates to Solyndra?
Well, I think it needs to be investigated. Obviously, no one administration should be telling a private company when they can release their data on whatever they want to release, and whoever wrote that email should be fired. We should find out who did that. But I think the larger point that Marsha Blackburn is making is not correct. She's suggesting that because 1.5% of these loans turned out to be a bad idea, that somehow the entire idea of making America run on green energy and get us off of foreign oil is a bad idea. I strongly disagree with that. I think anytime you move to a new technology, the government has always been involved. You just take a look at the railroads. I mean, the government built the railroads all across the country, gave land grants, and there was massive corruption and corruption sound very similar to me, because maybe because usually it's corporations doing the corruption. But in any case, there was massive corruption. Some of 30 to 40 to maybe even more than 50% of the people building those railroads were corrupt, and yet the railroads served the country for a good 100 years. I think that whoever did this should be fired, but it shouldn't take away from the larger issue, which is we need to move to green energy.
Well, these things are not mutually exclusive. Just as the bad should not stain, the good, nor should the good shield the bad.
Exactly.
Also, when it comes to green energy, we have to remember right now there's a couple of hiccups that are rather problematic. Number one, biofuels cause more air pollution than does oil. That's a strangeness, and the industry advocates don't disagree with that. They think it's only fair to measure them later on when they have a chance. But in addition to that, we have all this oil available to us off the outer continental shelf. We've also got this pipeline, this Keystone pipeline, that's been under review for like 3 years. And just as it was about to go forward, the Obama administration puts the kibosh on it, saying, well, we've got to think its route. We're not happy with its route. So Canada goes ahead, screams uncle, acquiesces, says, fine, we'll put it through in the other direction, and the Obama administration still won't come forward, even though the very obstacle they cited as their reason for delay has been removed. What's your thinking on that?
I think the ultimate question is oil our future? Are we going to demand for the next 30, 50, 60 years, 100 years, that our future be tied to fossil fuels, these dirty fuels that, notwithstanding what Canada has, still are largely under the control of dictators? Or are we going to move on to another kind of energy? I mean, you know, whether it's the electric battery or windmills or solar energy or other things, I think it's time to move on. And everything you name, whether it's the pipeline or the offshore drilling, is stuff that's not even going to come due for 25 or 30 years. So the question is not what do we need now. The question is what do we need 30 years from now. And I would hope 30 years from now we are getting away from fossil fuels.
Yeah, but we were told that about fossil fuels 20, 30 years ago, and if we had not listened to those folks then, we'd be awash in it now. Isn't that fair to remind people?
I think have we followed Jimmy Carter, who I don't like on a lot of issues, but have we followed him about solar energy in the 70s, we would be one of the people, one of the countries in charge of it today, rather than letting China control this technology that we invented.
Yeah, but it looks like, you know, it's like in the name of protecting the environment from increased gas consumption, you got people on the left apparently opposing the price-cutting strategy of more offshore drilling while also arguing that OPEC should do it for us. This is the Democratic history. I mean, it's like we're listening to a bizarre segment of Jeopardy. Alex, I'll take schizophrenia for $200. Look, let me tell people what I'm talking about and then get your comment on it. A few years ago, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, California Democrat, wrote a March 13th letter to Vice President Dick Cheney telling him what? To use the president, or that the president should use his, quote, get this, considerable influence with OPEC nations to encourage oil-producing countries to increase their oil production, unquote. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. If she supports more oil production anyway, why not have it originate in America where it can better cut fuel costs and reduce spillage through transport? What's wrong with that?
The answer, again, is short-term versus long-term. America can't short-term, on a short-term basis, drastically increase the supply of oil. All that offshore drilling, all those pipelines, you're talking about solutions for 25 to 30 years from now. The only people who can dramatically increase oil production now is the OPEC nations. That's exactly what I want to get away from, but I want to get away from oil entirely. I recognize we can't do that in 5 or 10 years. I think we can do it in 25 or 30 years, just like we went to the railroads and every other bit of, we went to the cars 100 years ago. We need to move to a new technology.
Yes, but as long as we have such a phenomenal amount of this, as well as natural gas, why is the idea of eventually transitioning to renewable fuels, but still taking advantage of the bounty before us and all the jobs that can be triggered by it, why do we have to look at these two things as being mutually exclusive? I think we're harming ourselves. I've heard this stuff before about the left contending that drilling now wouldn't yield results for another 10 years. But then again, this is a position frequently echoed by Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada. And of course, again, as I mentioned earlier, by that their own measure, this means that we could be swimming in surplus oil right now had we ignored them a decade ago when they were saying the same thing. This is just my opinion.
There were very few limitations on oil a decade or 20 or 30 years ago. They couldn't go as deep as they can go now, and frankly, they still can't go as deep as they go now. Witness the massive spill in the Gulf. So the problem is,
You can't take an aberration and use it as the norm. You never want to use it. Aberrations do not the norm make. You can't do that. If you take a peripheral observation and you infer it as if it were a conclusive analysis, and then you accordingly project it as such, you're doing an intellectual injustice or a denial of justice to all of us. But let me get back to Occupy Wall Street. We don't have a lot of time left.
I don't think billions of gallons are peripheral, but go ahead.
Here about the Occupy Wall Street crowd. Now, it's a two-month anniversary. They've elevated their protests across the country. Most, of course, are looking at what's going on in New York. Since the protesters have essentially been denied their occupancy status of Zuccotti Park, in other words, they can't any longer create villages in these parks, they've become even more aggressive, as I said. But the latest liberal public policy polling survey reflects that their support is actually dropping, Mark, to 33%. While the opposition has jumped to 45%, of course, resulting in a negative standing of 12%. Will their behavior change or be exacerbated by the very law enforcement they seem to provoke? Mark Levine.
I think Mayor Bloomberg made a terrible mistake when he said that Occupy Wall Street is not allowed the same First Amendment rights that even the Ku Klux Klan is allowed under the United States Constitution. By clearing them out from Zuccotti Park, he is assured they're going to be on the streets. They're going to be in the stock market. He is assured these police battles. He's assured that, and frankly, it's like the Hoovervilles of after Herbert Hoover, where, by the way, people were allowed to camp outside. And I guarantee you, Herbert Hoover didn't like it. The fact that Mayor Bloomberg has less respect for the First Amendment than Herbert Hoover means that Occupy Wall Street will continue for years to come.
Mark, what you and so many of your ilk forget is that the Occupy Wall Street crowd does not have the right to usurp the First Amendment rights of other pedestrians and their access to free assembly.
Pedestrians can walk through the park. Come on.
No. Does the OWS have the right to usurp other pedestrians, their First Amendment right to free assembly, in the name of executing their own? I would say not. You cannot be the embodiment of the very thing you object and still be taken seriously. Stick with us, Battleline Main Street. I'm Alan Nathan.